You realize all of us are authors? We're all writing. We're writing a story. The most important story that'll ever be written, which is a story of your life and the story of your family. Of all of the millions of books that have been written, it is clear that there is none that is more personal or more impacting than the unique story of your own family. Every family has its own unique story. Yes, there are similarities between stories of families, but every family has its own story, and it is unique. It is a story that is woven from generation to generation, each generation adding its own chapter. Now, when you think of all the influences you've had in your lifetime, and those who have shaped you into the person you are this morning, it's very likely that your family is at the very top of the list of the influences in your life. There is simply no event, there is no individual that possesses the power to shape and change our lives like family. You know, the 18 years we spend under our parents' roof, in many ways, those few short years, they determine the path we're going to take for the rest of our lives, even if we live to be 100 or more. There is simply no one or anyone that shapes our lives then like family. They say that by the age of three, listen to this, by the age of three, our psychological track for life has been formed and set. So by the time a child is 3 years old, the psychological track that they are going to operate on for the rest of their lives is already in place. They also tell us that by the age of five, we glean 90% of the basic knowledge we will acquire throughout our entire lifetime. Think of that. By the age of five, we know 90% of all we're going to know about life. Now, I'm not speaking of math and science and, you know, these things. I'm talking about the basics of life. What is right? What is wrong? What is proper? What is improper? What is proper social etiquette, values in life, who one should trust and one they should not trust. All of this we learn by the age of five. They say 90% of everything we're going to know about life and how to live in this world of ours, we learn by the age of five. And that is under the direction in most all lives of parents and family. You know, from early on, our families influence our likes, our dislikes. If you think about the food you like and the cars you drive or the car you would not be found dead in, it is probably something that has been, you know, part of the family history. Our political views, our educational pursuits, our vocations in life many times are guided by a grandparent or a parent or an uncle or someone that spoke into our life. So even the vocations we choose in life, they're guided by family. Recreation. If your family was in baseball, you probably loved going out to the Brewer games. If your family was a family that enjoyed football, you're probably trying to find tickets to Green Bay. Well, if you're on the waiting list, good news, they say that by 2050, you should have your tickets, okay? And so all of this comes out of family and family life. How we spend our money, how we earn our money, and even our spiritual appetite. Our appetite for God, the appetite we have for prayer and seeking the face of God. All of this comes out of our family influence. We've all been shaped then by the environments in which we were raised. Some of us, sadly, we watched our parents get up, go to church religiously every single Sunday, but then on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, they lived like the world. And something inside of us caught and saw the hypocrisy and said, if that is what it means to serve God, you know, that's just a fakery. And why should I even want a part of it? And sadly, many of us in this room, maybe we have spent many years of our lives, even decades of our lives, away from God, because of what we experienced at home. Others of us were raised in godly homes, came to the conclusion by watching our parents and watching their genuine relationship with God, we came to the conclusion early on that that's the way we want to live our lives. And that is the way that everyone, in our estimation, should live, because we can see all the benefits that are ours of serving God by having lived in that environment in our homes. So whether for good or for bad, all of us have been shaped by our families in many, many different ways. You know, sometimes I think as I am going about my day, you know, that sounds just like my dad. And it scares me. I think all of us, you know, we look at our parents and we know them, and we know them so well because we lived our lives with them and interacted with them 24/7, 365, for whatever number of years we're under the roof. And we all kind of thought in the back of our minds, when we grow up, we're not going to be like dad or mom. Lots of luck. And so I catch myself and I say, you know, that sounds just like my dad. I even catch myself replicating some of dad's mannerisms. My father had this habit of folding his arms like this. And I find I'm doing that so often that I've got friends and family members that'll come up and actually pry them apart and say, don't do that. Or walking with my hands in my pocket, whether I'm going up an escalator, a stairs, or down a stairs. And some will say, you know, you shouldn't have your hands in your pocket. If you ever trip, you want your hands available. Okay, all right. So it's amazing then when you begin to think about all the influence, little mannerisms, things we say, and in time we look at our lives and we have become our father and we've become much like our mother. It's amazing how often my mom's words come out of my mouth. For most of us, I think it is safe to say then that no one has shaped our lives like our families. Now, because of that fact, because of the environment that we were raised in, whether it was a godly environment or whether it was an ungodly environment, whether it was one that was organized or whether you were raised in mass chaos, whatever the environment was of your home, that becomes to us the norm. And if we're not careful, we begin to replicate how we were raised without giving a lot of thought to it. And so most of us then, in this generation, we go about family life on what I would say is autopilot, following in the footsteps of the previous generation with little or no thought. We're just doing what they did. It's almost like monkey see, monkey do. It is, we saw it lived out, and in some of it was great, and so we said, we've got to do it this way. And others of us may have said, you know, this isn't the way to live life, and there's a better way, and so we have chosen that better way for life, thank God. Now, during this series, what we're going to do is we're going to ponder week by week, what would life be like if we were to do life on purpose? Not just by automatic, you know, pilot, but if we were to determine carefully choosing the models we're going to follow and the values we're going to incorporate into our family story. So we're not going to just do what has been done, but we are going to carefully look everything over and make sure we're choosing a model that is a godly model and influences that are for good and for God. Every generation that has preceded us so far has written a chapter of this book. It's our family story. And every generation gets to write its own chapter, including you. You will write your own unique chapter in this big, long book called Our Genealogy, Our History, Our Story of the Family. Now, your family story is not finished, and neither is mine. You and I this morning are still writing our own chapter. And it's pretty exciting to think That our chapter, the chapter that we're writing, and the chapter that I want to encourage you to write over these next few weeks, the chapter that you're writing, no matter what has preceded you, that you write a chapter that is so good that it becomes the title of the book. And that is my prayer for each and every one of you. Now, Sherry and I are empty nesters, like a lot of you that have gathered here this morning. And you might be tempted to think, well, while my family is already grown, this series doesn't have a lot to do with me. But I want you to stop and to think of the value and the influence that you have as a grandparent upon your grandchildren. And even if your kids are grown, you're still writing the family story. And I would encourage you throughout these next weeks not to miss a single time. Others may say, I'm single, I'm dating. This series has nothing to do with me. Friend, if you're single, you're still writing your story. And the person you're dating is going to have a part in that story. And if you marry that person that you marry is going to be an integral part of your story for life. So, whether you're single, whether you're married, whether you're divorced, whether you come from a full house or an empty house, we're all still writing our story. Now, Psalm 78 has a lot to say about writing the family story. Let's see what the psalmist has to say in Psalm 78 about drafting, writing, and living out this thing called the story of the family. Here's what he writes. In verse 1, he says, O my people, listen to my instructions. He says, listen carefully. What I'm about to tell you is vital. It's very important. Open your ears to what I'm saying. For I will speak to you in a parable. I will teach you hidden lessons from our past. Notice here, he's saying, we're going to teach you some of the things that you don't even know about your own past, about your own family story. Stories that we have heard and known, stories our ancestors handed down to us. We will not hide these truths from our children. We will tell the next generation about the glorious deeds of the Lord, about his power and his mighty wonders. For he has issued his laws to Jacob. He gave his instructions to Israel. He commanded our ancestors to teach them to their children, so the next generation might know them, even the children not yet born, and they in turn will teach their own children. So each generation should set its hope anew on God, not forgetting his glorious miracles and obeying his commands. Then they will not be like the ancestors, like their ancestors, stubborn. Here's the family lineage, he said. If you'll do these things, he says, then you will not be like the ancestors, which were stubborn, rebellious, and unfaithful, refusing to give their hearts to God. Now, I want you to note here, as we read through Psalm 78, many of you probably caught, there are three components to the story. He said the first component is the past. All of us have a past. A past that we had no say in. We had ancestors that were many, many years removed from us, yet who they were and what they have sown into the book is all part of our story, whether we like it or not. So we all have a past. All of us this morning here in this sanctuary, we are living not in the past, we are living in the present. So we have, as part of our story, we've got a past, we've got a present. That is what we're writing right now, this day. But we also have a future. And so the psalmist says, this story is comprised of past, present, and future. Let's go back to Psalm 78, verse 3. Stories we have heard and known. Stories our ancestors handed down to us. We will not hide these truths from our children. We'll come back to that in just a few moments. But he concludes there with the phrase, we will not hide these things from our children. Every single family has a past. Most of us probably have a chapter in our family story that we like to tear out, burn, and bury. We don't want it any part of our life. We don't want to know anything more about it. We don't want to hear anything more about it. It's as though it's a dark part of the history and the story of our family, so if we can just get rid of it. Someone has said, you can choose your friends, but not your relatives. So we're all stuck with our relatives. Turn to your neighbor and say, I'm stuck with my relatives. But guess what? They're stuck with us too. So you can choose your friends, but not your relatives. Someone else has said, if you shake any family tree long enough, a few nuts are sure to fall out. Now, generations before us have written what they have written. It is their chapter, and it is what it is. Now, often we're tempted to whitewash the past, taking the less desirable moments of our history and then sweeping them under the rug. Here's an example of that. The story is that one day a professor of genealogy and research, he came across historic evidence that a sitting member of the U.S. Senate had a distant relative who was a horse thief and a train robber during the latter part of the 19th century. Now, this man was arrested, sent to jail, then escaped, but was ultimately caught and then hanged. The researcher wrote the senator inquiring about this relative and trying to tie him in with this relative, and so the senator responded. Now, I want you to listen to the response from the senator's office. He was a famous cowboy. Now, here's his spin. He was a famous cowboy. His business empire grew to include acquisition of valuable equestrian, which is horses, assets, and intimate dealings with the railroad. Beginning in 1883, he devoted several years of his life to government service, that's jail. Finally, taking leave, that's when he ran off, and dealing with the railroad, it's when he became a thief on the railroad. In 1887, he was a key player in a vital investigation run by the renowned Pinkerton Detective Agency. He was the very object of that investigation. And in 1889, here's how he closes it out. In 1889, he passed away during an important civil function held in his honor when the platform upon which he was standing collapsed. You talk about being a spin doctor. You know, when it comes to the past and it comes to our relatives and all the little dark secrets that are out there somewhere, sometimes we want to just kind of whitewash it all away and hide it or to rewrite the history. The psalmist said, however, that we should not hide our past. We should not hide it, even though it's messy. And its chapters are a chapter we would all like to forget. It's all part, whether we like it or not, of our family story. You know, it's highly likely that every family here this morning has what I will call for the moment an Uncle Bubba or an Aunt Daisy who made an absolute mess of their lives and of the family. Bubba was the horse thief. That's his chapter. And it is what it is. There's no changing it. That is what Bubba was. However, Daisy was a mean-spirited, forgive me, old bag with a tongue that was sharper than a knife. And sadly, her only contribution to the story is the fact of how mean she was. And every time she opened her mouth, it spewed out poison. Now, her contribution to the story cannot be changed, nor should it be totally hidden. You see, if we fail to call out the mistakes of the past, they cannot provide our lessons for the future. Now, this does not mean that we dwell on the past and we take great pleasure in, talking negatively about the family story. However, it is what it is. And if we fail to do so, our children will be doomed to repeat the same character flaws and failures of the previous generations. One generation must learn from the other. Because of the death of my mother, we were going through some of the family records, and it was pretty amazing as we were reading through them. My great-grandfather, Bronson Brooks, he's my great-grandfather now, he lived a double life. He went down to fight in the Civil War, found a lady there that he liked and started a family there, and also had a family in Illinois and one in Iowa. Nice guy. He's my kin. One of the two families produced Solon Brooks, which is my grandfather, my father's father. Solon, once again, a very quiet man, but he loved to drink. I have an Uncle Frank. Uncle Frank broke into his own business, robbed his own business, then started it on fire, got caught. The FBI arrested him, and he actually beat the lie detector test. Is your name Frank? No. Do you live in Browns Valley, Minnesota? Never heard of it. He lied to every single question, and the machine just lost its mind. You see, not every chapter in our family story is a pretty one. I cannot change what they wrote. But knowing their weaknesses and their propensities towards sin, I am determined that I will stand on their shoulders and I will write a new chapter along with my family. And I'm determined to change the story from this chapter on, as it tells us in Psalm 78 and verse 4, we will not hide these truths from our children. We will tell the next generation about the glorious deeds of the Lord, about his power and his mighty wonders. Now, friends, we only get to write one chapter. That chapter that we get to write is our unique chapter. We cannot go back and edit the past, and we cannot go and presume that we will write something for the next generation. The only part of the story we get to write is our own chapter. The upcoming generation is watching over our shoulders, mom and dad, grandparents, uncle, aunt, brother, sister. The upcoming generations are observing us, and they're reading our story as we're writing it over our shoulder. They're watching and they're reading. How do we deal with pressure? When the pressures of life are on, do we explode? How do we deal with disappointment? Oh, it's all, maybe you're not scripting it out every day, but I assure you that sons and daughters, grandchildren, brothers, sisters, and neighbors and others, they're watching how you respond in times of disappointment. They're trying to figure out your politics. They're trying to figure out how to live marriage by watching your marriage. They're trying to figure out what is pure and what is just and what is right in a sexually perverted world. They're watching and are reading the story that you're writing about money, about taxes, about truth. How do you deal with death? How do you deal with everyday life? And how do you embrace and have a relationship with God? Look at verse 4. We will not hide these truths from our children. We will tell the next generation about the glorious deeds of the Lord, about His power and His mighty wonders. Verse 6, so the next generation might know them, even the children not yet born, and they in turn will teach their own children. Notice here, one chapter flows into the next. And each chapter is being read one by the other. I loved hearing the stories, and I will cherish them for a lifetime, of both of my parents. My father would tell me of how he would sit outside the Assembly of God Church with a drinking buddy, and the windows were open. He could hear them singing on the inside. And he said, I've never heard anyone ever sing like that before. And even though they're sitting there drinking and sharing a bottle together, he and his drinking buddy, he knew this much. He knew that there was a tug of God that was going on inside of his heart as he would listen to the open window of the church when they would worship and sing. He told me of how he walked in the back door of that church. He got up the courage one night and sat there and listened to the preacher on the inside for the first time after sitting outside and listening to him for a number of occasions. But on this occasion, he said it was as though I was the only one in the room. And when he was preaching and telling us that God loves us and that God had a plan for our lives and that God forgives our sin and our past and he gives us a brand new start, my father would say that he felt as though he was literally catapulted out of his pew and he came to an altar and committed his life to Christ and went home and told my mother, this preacher, did you tell him about me? It seems as though when he was preaching, he knew my entire story. No, God was the one that was telling the story. My father would tell us how he'd been healed miraculously. When I think of some of the great saints of God that have come through our doors, have gone home to glory over the years, I think of Don Bernander. And Don would tell that story, and I would never, ever tire of hearing the story of how he had broken his foot, and he heard that there was a healing crusade that was going on, and he polished his shoes so that he could wear it back home from the healing crusade, though he was wearing a big old cast on his foot. Those kinds of stories, you pass them on from generation to generation. They're all part of not only one generation's story, but they become part of our entire family story, our history. The miracles that my father would tell me about. Stories of divine protection on the highways. All of this sunk deep down on the inside of my heart. And as he would tell his story, I want to know this God that is a Savior. I want to know this God that's a healer. I want to know a God. My father one time told me how he was driving down the highway, going north on Highway 81 towards Fargo, North Dakota. And as he came over the brink of the hill, and my father, he had only one speed, and it was fast. And so he came over the brink of the hill, and there was, across the whole road, there was a combine. And he braced himself, realizing that it was either the ditch or hitting straight on that big piece of machinery. And he said he braced and closed his eyes for the impact, which was imminent. And he said, boom, it disappeared right before his eyes. He said, I don't understand how that happened. I don't understand all of it, but this is something I've never forgotten in all my life. And a story that I've told to my children. And when my grandchildren get a little older, they're going to hear the story as well because it's part of our story. And there are some parts of the story that they're not so good. But nonetheless, they're still part. And because they're part, I'm not going to malign those individuals and I'm not going to denigrate them. And I am not going to, you know, be liable against them and libelous about them. But I do want my family to know. Families are not perfect. They're just forgiven. And they're families that, yes, there can be some struggles But God will see us through, and God has been good. And you can see it from generation to generation. And the Bible says, gather them around and tell the story one generation to the other. The past tells it to the present, and the present tells it to the future. Some of you have been in relay races. That is where the baton is passed on to the next runner. And generally, as you do a pass off to the next, it is a very strategic moment. In that moment, many Olympians that have led the race, they have lost at the time of passing off the baton to the next. Friends, let me tell you, no matter how fervent you are in serving God, there needs to be a firm handoff of what we believe in our faith, in our story, passed on to the next generation. And generally, when there's a relay race, the two will run side by side, pacing themselves alongside of each other until it is safely in hand. And then the one with the baton continues on running. If we miss it on the pass off, we're going to miss it. I encourage you this morning, and I ask you this morning, are you writing the story that you really want to write? Is the story that is being scripted out, is it the story you've dreamt about? Is it the story you've longed to live out? Or is it just kind of happening? I encourage you to write your own chapter. Write the chapter of your life and in the story of your moments and family in such a way that it becomes the title of the book. Maybe some titles for your book could be Transformed, Beauty from Ashes, Amazing Grace. You will write the story. And the story will have such an impact. No matter what the past has been like. You say, well, things are pretty messed up. I don't know whether anything good could ever come out of this or not. I mean, it's not only one generation, but it's been multiple generations that have been absolutely all messed up. But God says, I'll give you a new sheet of paper so you can write the story you've always wanted to write. This morning we all come. We're authors. We've been writing a story, the most important story we'll ever write, because this story is going to determine the strength of our family, our future, and the future of generations that will follow after us. And so we're all writers. Have you ever been writing when you just came to the conclusion, I've just got to start over? And, you know, remember in the old days, some of you don't even know what a typewriter is. I understand. And bless you for it. Computers are superior. But you'd have that old typewriter, and you're pounding away, and pretty soon you realize, hey, this isn't really what I want to say. And in the first old days, remember the erasers, the hard eraser? You try and erase it so that you could, you know, overwrite it, you know, print over it once more. And then you keep on going, and then what would happen? Wear all the way through, right? And then you had a hole in your paper. Then they came out with this great stuff called whiteout. And they came with all kinds of other things. It was all meant to cover up what had been written. But there's a point whereby you just kind of say, you know, I've just got to start this thing all over. It's not the story I want to live. Jesus, I'm giving you this one. And he said, look what I've got for you. I'll give you a brand new page. And we're going to write together. That's a Dad Brooks thing again. Hand in the pocket. Father, we're so glad that you love us. So glad that you give us an opportunity for a brand new start in life. So glad that you care about those that are not even yet born. You tell us to write the story in such a way that even those that are generations removed yet at this moment, that their lives will be impacted by the life we live. Lord, I pray for the many in this room that would say, I made such a mess. I've got to start over. And we're so glad to know you say to us in that moment, here's a new piece of paper. Begin to rewrite the story. And I'll walk with you. I'll help you. We'll write this thing together. And it's going to be such a great chapter that no matter how messed up the past is going to be or has been, that from this moment on, this chapter is going to be the title of the book. Lord, I pray for so many in this room that are saying, I long for a new start. And I pray, Lord, in these next few moments, Lord, that this will be the moment of turning in the old messed up story and receiving from you, from your very hands, the brand new sheets so we can start fresh, start clean, start over.